Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, mayoral hopeful Christine Quinn takes your calls. You can get in line right now. She's about to come into the studio. Call in at 212-433-WNYC with your questions for Christine Quinn, 212-433-9692 right now. Brooklyn Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, really Brooklyn and Queens Congressman, undecided on attacking Syria. He will take your calls later this hour. So if you live in the 8th Congressional District in parts of Brooklyn and Queens, call up later and convince your congressman one way or the other on military strikes in Syria. Plus, the issue that was supposed to make headlines at the G20 summit before Syria overwhelmed it, stopping companies like Apple from avoiding taxes through international tax havens. David K. Johnston will be our explainer-in-chief on that. And Lydia Callis today. She became famous during Sandy as Mayor Bloomberg's sign language interpreter. She'll talk about her audience with things you don't know about the hearing impaired in New York and what policies she would like to see enacted in the city to help them. But we do begin with our final candidate appearance before the New York primary from mayoral hopeful and city council speaker Christine Quinn. Speaker Quinn, thanks for all your accessibility throughout the campaign, and welcome back at least one last time before primary day WNYC.
Thank you.
And remember, listeners, this final round of candidate appearances is a call-in round. Most of the questions will come from you, so call up right now at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, especially if you're still undecided.
Those are the folks we're looking for.
What do you want to know from Christine Quinn? And if you're just coming back from vacation, even still, I'll let you know that we've had a clean sweep of candidates answering your questions. We took your calls earlier this week for Bill Thompson and Bill de Blasio, last week for John Liu and Anthony Weiner, the week before that for Joe Loda and John Katsimatidis. And if you want to go back and hear any of those as you're still making up your mind in the Democratic or Republican primary, they're all on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. As the calls are coming in, Speaker Quinn, I'll ask you a few questions.
Sure.
And let me not overlook the obvious. You were the front runner in the polls for most of the campaign until about a month ago. In the latest Quinnipiac, you're running third with less than half of Bill de Blasio's support. What happened?
Well, look, I never believed those polls when they had us in the front runner position. I think most of that was honestly name recognition just because of the speaker's job tends to be covered in the press more than sometimes some of the other positions. So I always knew the numbers were going to change. I always knew things were going to move around. And I don't know, and we've seen this in the presidential election. We saw this in the last mayoral election. The public polls often drive a narrative in the press, but they're often very inaccurate, as we see in elections. I mean, if you look at the last mayoral election, I think they had Bloomberg up by like the double digits. I can't remember the numbers.
And then it was really close.
Really close. And then if you look at the presidentials, there was a period of time when President Obama was up by 14. A week later, down by 14. A week later, up by 14. So, look, I think we have a few days left till the primary. And really that, I know this sounds cliche, but that is the poll that matters. That's the moment where people go out and say what they think and who they want. And I would just urge all listeners to go to my website, Quinn for New York, take a look at my record, take a look at my position, and hopefully come out and support me on Tuesday.
One more question as our callers are getting screened. We have a few almost ready to go. The New Yorker has an article by John Cassidy on its website today headlined, "Has Christine Quinn Missed New York's Liberal Moment?" And it says that for the last 20 years, New Yorkers have wanted adult supervision in our mayor. He uses that term, adult supervision. So we elected a cop in Giuliani, followed by a businessman in Bloomberg. But now with the city relatively safe and business booming, though not the middle class, they're ready for one of their own again, a New York City liberal. And so you ran the wrong campaign. Have you read that article?
I haven't, so I can't really comment on it.
And to the premise?
You know, I think I've run a very good campaign based on both my record of having delivered for this city and my vision moving forward. And I think what New Yorkers want is a progressive who can get things done. Because talk, you know, look, at the end of the day, New Yorkers are smart. They know talk is cheap. What they want is somebody who can get housing for the middle class built, who can improve our schools, who can make teacher training really top notch so we can help teachers become the best they can be, who can grow jobs in every neighborhood so nobody's left behind. And I think that does take an adult running the government with the rest of New York.
Let's go to the phones. Again, this is the call-in round for our mayoral candidate appearances. Most of the questions from here on in are going to come from you and Sue in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Christine Quinn. Hello.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. I'd like to know if you support the building of tall towers in low-rise residential neighborhoods over the opposition of communities.
Do you have any neighborhoods or developments in mind?
I'm thinking about Greenpoint. I'm thinking about City Point. I live in Lefferts Gardens on the east side of Brooklyn.
Okay. Well, look, you want to do everything you can to preserve low-rise residential neighborhoods in the city, particularly if they're ones that are lucky enough to still have a lot of rent-protected tenants in them, because that's one of the biggest hits that the middle class has taken in New York is the loss of rent protection. So I think in the land use process, we want to do everything we can to preserve the integrity of neighborhoods, work with the community boards to make sure their voice is part of the land use process, and that when there is development, if it has to happen, it's done in a way that really takes the community input into account. But that doesn't mean you're always going to be able to get to agreements. And sometimes, as we had to do in the case of the Kingsbridge Armory, you just have to say no.
I think it's been one of the hallmarks of Bloomberg administration development policy to build concentrations of high-rise apartments around subway stops. And
right.
That density is environmentally good because it pushes people into public transportation and out of cars. And sometimes that means disappointing people who want their neighborhoods not to be so developed. But that was a very conscious thing that he did, thinking it was for the greater good. Is that your understanding of it? And do you have a position on that?
I mean, I think there was definitely some focus on the mayor's part about kind of transportation as a hub that then allows a neighborhood to grow. I think in some places that's worked well. So we see in Hudson Yards, where we've extended the number 7, that's going to be critical to making that new development take off there in a way that will be a benefit to the city. But I think there's other places, particularly parts of Brooklyn, where it hasn't worked out as we or others might have hoped it would, and we're really seeing too much development.
David in Queens, you're on WNYC with Christine Quinn. Hello, David.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Hi, Chris.
Hi, David. How you doing?
All right, good. I just want to compliment you for your service to the city of New York and
thank
city
you.
Speaker for the past 3 terms. But my point of contention with you, and you are committed to serving the city of New York and its citizens, and I compliment you for that. But my point of contention with you is, Chris, is why did you endorse Mayor Bloomberg to serve a 3rd term? That's what's derailing me with you. I want you to break it down for me. Why did you do that? I mean, you would have been elected mayor if you had run. And even now, you would have been elected mayor. But the fact that you endorsed him for a 3rd term, going against city charter, going against the citizens of New York, that really put a spoke in a lot of people's wheels when it comes to really coming out and endorsing you. And probably you could break it down for me.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
And best of luck in the election.
David, thank you.
Thank you. You know, I did, and I stand by the decision in 2008. Vote to give voters another chance. I actually endorsed Bill Thompson in the election, but give voters another chance to decide whether they wanted to keep the mayor, me, other elected officials or not. And I thought, given the extreme economic crisis we were in, it was appropriate to give voters a choice of consistency or not. And in some cases, they sent elected officials back. In other cases, they didn't. Not everyone who was up for reelection got reelected and sent back. And it was not an easy decision. I knew there was opposition to it. But look, David, I think what you want in a leader is someone who's willing to take a tough decision if they think it's right, even if there's political opposition. Because if you're a mayor, you're going to have to make decisions that are going to be unpopular. And you don't want someone who's afraid to do that.
And now, because of the financial crisis?
Yes.
Emergency?
Yes. Yes, that was the main focus for, I think, all of us in the council was the real impact of the financial crisis.
And you didn't think you could run the city at that time?
I thought voters deserved a choice, given the situation we were in, of whether they wanted to keep consistency or keep change. Now, look, I've always been very clear about the decision I made, and I stand by it. And I say that because I think it's distinct than other people in this race. You know, Bill de Blasio and I ran against each other for the speaker's position. And when we were running for speaker...
2005,
right? In 2005, I committed to, and so did Bill de Blasio, to our colleagues in that race to extend term limits by legislation. Now, Bill made that commitment clearly because he was trying to get votes from council members. He said it over and over again. Now he won't really even admit that he said it, basically. And what you see here is Bill de Blasio, when he wants one set of votes, saying one thing. Now that he's running for mayor, he wants a different set of votes, New Yorkers, not council members, and he's talking out of the other side of his mouth and saying something altogether different. And I don't think that kind of inconsistency, even if you disagree with my decision, is what we want in a mayor.
But here's the difference that de Blasio would argue, and a lot of people would argue, between 2005 and 2009. Democrats, liberal Democrats, have always been against term limits.
Sure.
In the abstract, this has been a Republican push from Gingrich at the congressional level to Ron Lauder in New York, who's the one who pushed this through, because they wanted to break the Democratic lock on Congress in Gingrich's case and on city council in Lauder's case. So Democrats have always opposed it. You and de Blasio and, you know, many others. Then in 2009, because the people had voted this in twice in a referendum, it looked worse than just a question on good or bad term limits good or bad. It became Mayor Bloomberg trying to get around the will of the people expressed two times at the ballot box. Different.
But when Bill de Blasio said in 2005 that he would change term limits by legislation, that was also after two times of the voters having said it. So it's not like that two times by the voters.
Without going back to the voters again?
Yes. He said at that, we had a debate for all the speaker candidates. We only had one, unlike the million forums of the mayor's race. And at
and
that,
counting.
Right. He said specifically he would change it legislatively.
Okay.
Specifically, and the referenda had happened far before he made that statement. So look, I think that is a clear switch of positions based on politics, nothing else.
I'm going to take one more question on this topic before we move on to other things, because it's been so central to people's critique of you. And Susan in the Village, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I would like to ask the speaker, how am I supposed to convince my kids who are in their 20s that it means anything to vote when you abrogate two elections to give yourself and Bloomberg third terms? They just roll their eyes at me. They say it doesn't matter. The whole process is corrupt.
Well, look, I think if you look at what happened with the two referendums, what the voters did was put term limits in place, but also give the council the right to make changes legislatively. So we used a power that was given to us by voters. But what I would also say to your children, and I hope they're listening, is when they vote for a leader, for an elected official to be a leader, you want to vote for somebody who is willing to make a tough decision, even if that is unpopular. Because trust me, as mayor or even as speaker, you're going to have to make unpopular decisions. But you also want to vote for somebody, and you should kind of roll your eyes at somebody who says one thing when they're running for one office with one set of voters, Bill de Blasio running for speaker in the case of the council members being the voters, and now running for mayor and saying an altogether different thing, pretending he never made that first commitment. That is exactly the kind of switch that adds so much cynicism to the democratic process.
Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
We're taking your calls for City Council Speaker and Mayoral Hopeful Christine Quinn, the final guest in our final round of mayoral appearances here on The Brian Lehrer Show. A call-in round. You're asking most of the questions. 212-433-WNYC. And Mark in Brooklyn. You're on the air. Hello, Mark.
Hi there. I just had a question, a follow-up actually to a response that Ms. Quinn gave to a question last time she was on your show, which had to do with subway naming rights. And sort of a small bore issue, not on anyone's radar in a huge way, but the answer has sort of been turning over in my head, and I had a question about it. I'm just wondering, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but your response was, I don't like this idea, nobody really likes this idea, but if they want to give us money, I'll take it. Are there other wildly unpopular sort of initiative that you would go along with for the money?
Well, look, I mean, I think no one likes the idea of having to have a name on a subway. But if the MTA hits tough budget problems, you can't rule something like that out. In the same
way, so you would sell the rights even though nobody seems to really want it for the money.
I mean, if we're in a tough budget situation, it's not going to be the first place I go to fund the subways. But you can't say you'd never do that. Depending on what the budget situation of the MTA might be. It might be the lesser of two evils, just to be honest about it, if you had to put a name of a company on a subway stop, if that could really get us the elevators that seniors needed in a subway or that disabled New Yorkers needed, or could get us, you know, more bus service in the neighborhood or, you know, better service at that subway, things of that nature. I just think you can't ever say absolutely no.
And Mark, thank you for your call. We give Mark credit for a long
attention
span.
Exactly, I agree.
Remembering an answer.
I agree.
And accurately that you gave on this show a couple of months ago.
Dedicated listener,
asking
Brian.
Asking a follow-up question, so maybe he'll be the next substitute host. Who knows? All right, Lisa in – oh, but, you know, I'll ask you a follow-up, actually,
okay.
On his follow-up, which is, since you as mayor do not control the
Correct.
MTA,
right.
If you're elected mayor, would you negotiate with them – in any particular way or lobby for any parameters or restrictions or anything having to do with quality or how much money the city gets or
yeah.
anything like that having to do with these subway station sponsorships?
Look, if this happened, and we're talking completely hypothetically here, so I don't want people to turn on.
But they're considering it, right?
I think it's something in the general kind of, may lieu of stuff that the MTA is considering. If this was going to happen, and again, this is hypothetically, the city would have to be fully at the table, you know what I mean? And not just negotiating the end of the conversation, but really in there, because we're talking about the streets and neighborhoods of New York City.
Lisa in Red Hook. You're on WNYC with Christine Quinn. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Ms. Quinn. How are you?
I'm good, Lisa. How are you?
Fantastic. I have a couple of questions regarding your position on Frisk. I've heard this and I've heard that, and if you could just lay it on the line and let us know what's the real Christine Quinn think about the issue of stop and frisk, and particularly as it relates to small quantities of marijuana and the decriminalization of that.
Well, let me just start with your last point. I fully support the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana, and I would do everything as mayor to get the state to pass that bill.
Decriminalization or, as John Lewis proposed, legalization of small amounts?
The proposal that is up in Albany is the one that I would push forward, and I wish we could pass that on the city council, city level. We can't. It's a penal code issue. We have to go to Albany. We need to get that done. The caller is absolutely right. It's a critical part of really reforming stop and frisk.
What does it not do, decriminalization, that legalization of small amounts for recreational use would do?
Well, I think what we're talking about here is the phenomenon within a stop when people take small amounts of marijuana out of their pocket, right, and then end up getting arrested.
So that's the important part.
That's the critical part here. And I think, look, we haven't even gotten that passed in Albany, and we want to get this done. And I think kind of upping it to the next level makes it far less likely that it's actually going to happen. But when I'm mayor, that we're going to push for that in Albany as aggressively as we possibly can, one. Two, I'm going to make a commitment to have unconstitutional stop and frisks end. Now, what does that mean? It means that the inspector general, which we passed the legislation for in the council, and I want to applaud my colleague Jemani Williams and Brad Lander for really being two of the big leaders on this, but we all came together, not only passed independent monitoring over terrible opposition, but overrode the mayor's veto. That monitor that is now going to be outside of the police department, in the Department of Investigations, with subpoena power, is going to have the ability to oversee this program and others. Also, when I'm mayor, we're going to analyze on a regular basis all of the CompStat data to make sure that when stops happen, the officers who've made the stops can justify why they made the stops, and their justifications are within a clear constitutional framework, and We need to make sure stops are happening at a much, much lower level than their peak of 700,000. And one of the worst parts of when we were at an all-time high was that they were yielding no arrests, no weapons. We were stopping innocent people. That's going to come to an end.
One of the questions of constitutionality with stop and frisk has to do with the reasonable cause to stop somebody and to question them and or to frisk them. We had an officer call in, a police officer, the other day when we were discussing this, who said, if I see a group of young adult males standing on a street corner that's a known drug location at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to go up and encounter them. Now, some people might say, no individual in that group did anything that indicated that they were breaking the law in any way. They were just on a street corner that's been known in the past for other people to deal drugs. Is that a constitutional stop, in your opinion?
Most likely not. Most likely not. You have to, just because somebody is in a high crime area, that is not a reason you can stop them. And it sounds like that's what that officer was saying, that these men were in an area that was a high crime area. And one of the things the judge recently said was specifically, that doesn't fly. Now, if the officer saw one of the men in the group do something, saw what they thought was a gun, that might change things. But just being on a corner or a block or an area is not enough. That doesn't make it
constitutional. And that's on the form that they fill out, right? High crime area.
Yes, and that has to be changed. Because in having that on the form, you're sending the totally wrong message to the officer. Because why would you have it on the form if it wasn't an okay thing to do? So we're also going to have to overhaul that form, as the court has offered, and also do a real significant and very broad-based retraining and ongoing retraining of officers.
Another stop and frisk question, since it's been such a central issue. Greg in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hey, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning, Speaker Quinn. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just would like to ask you, how can we take seriously what you're saying about the police, and how can we take seriously your commitment to the concerns of people of color, in particular Black people and Latino people, about policing, when you have committed to keep the police commissioner, who's widely despised in the city of New York? He's unapologetic about the tactics of the police. He's resistant to a ruling at the federal level about policing, and you know, on his watch in the process of stop and frisk, people have been murdered. Marley Graham, Chantel Davis, people have been murdered by the police as a result of these policies. So,
well, look, sorry.
Sorry, that was my quick trigger finger. Greg, we're going to get you an answer to your question.
Sorry about that, Greg, that you got cut off in mid-sentence there. Now, look, I think people should and can take my commitment seriously, because of everyone running, I'm the only person who's actually gotten reforms put in place. I mean, I'm the only person working with my colleagues in the council, compared to everyone else who's running, who's just talking and making commitments, who's actually gotten legislation passed. Now, look, on the question of Ray Kelly, I think folks can agree that there's good that Ray Kelly has done as police commissioner. It's part of the reason we see him being thought of or suggested by our senators to become the Department of Homeland Security secretary. Has everything Ray Kelly done been good? No. Do I agree with the way he has implemented stop and frisk, which I think has been at Mayor Bloomberg's direction? Absolutely not. And if he wanted to stay on as my police commissioner, he wouldn't have to know. His job is to keep this the safest big city in America. And he couldn't do unconstitutional stops, period. It would be his choice whether he wanted to lead that way. And if you look at his early beginnings as Mayor Bloomberg's police commissioner, crime was going down at a much higher rate, and stops were not happening in an unconstitutional way. They were happening at about 100 to 200,000, with most of those yielding arrests. So we know he can do it when he's instructed to do it that way.
And Greg, I apologize for accidentally cutting you off too quickly. Please call us again. But to follow up on a couple of things Greg said, I don't know that we want to necessarily call police shootings murders.
Correct.
If they have not been so adjudicated.
And those
so I want
not,
to be careful about that.
I agree.
But he characterized Kelly as widely despised, and especially in the Black and Latino communities. Do you disagree with that perception?
You know, I think that there is support for Ray Kelly out there in this city. And look, I certainly hear it. I hear that from New Yorkers. And I think there is concern and anger from New Yorkers. And I hear that, too, about the way the police commissioner has implemented stop and frisk. I mean, I think both of those are true.
But does this whole Kelly thing indicate that you've gotten caught trying to be too fine on some of these hot button issues? And so you've developed a trust issue on having Kelly but not having a signature policy, on paid sick leave. You supported the idea, but not now. And then when the pressure got so hot, you brought it up before city council, things like that.
Well, let me just go back to Ray Kelly for a second, because I think what it shows is that I actually have been clear. You know, I think that when I'm mayor, the police commissioner will work for me, as all the commissioners will. And they'll have to follow my instructions. And I don't believe kind of in the throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Ray Kelly has good qualities. Stop and frisk has been done wrong. He'll decide whether, you know, he wants to work for me with the requirement you can't do unconstitutional stop and frisks. Now, some of my opponents, it's true, have criticized this me for this. But again, I think it goes to consistency as a leader. Bill de Blasio has been very critical of Ray Kelly. Ask Bill de Blasio, maybe you did on the show, who are you considering for police commissioner? The two names he said he's considering, Chief Banks, Ray Kelly's right-hand man, the man who implemented and implements stop and frisk within the police department, a man who testified against all of the legislation in the city council. The second, Bill Bratton, a man who was just hired by Detroit and Oakland, California, to teach their police departments how to do stop and frisk, a man who the Detroit Free Press called a pioneer of stop and frisk. So look, I understand that not everyone agrees with my perspective on Ray Kelly, that I believe he could keep the city safe and not do unconstitutional stop and frisks, which would be the mandate. But what you got to look at here is somebody like Bill de Blasio talking out of both sides of his mouth and trying to have it both ways on a really critical issue like stop and frisk.
One more call. Michael in Queens, you're on WNYC with Christine Quinn.
Hopefully,
hello.
Brian won't hang up on you this time.
Oh, stop.
I'm a New York City teacher. Just having returned to work last week, I found out that the finalized version of how my evaluation is going to work this year includes 40% on test scores for students I don't teach and in subjects I don't teach, even though I'm a major subject social studies teacher. And I was wondering, if you were mayor, how would you ensure that the evaluations that teachers get are fair both for them and the students they teach?
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, Brian, thank you for being a teacher out there. And that's crazy that you're going to be evaluated for classes you don't even teach. So that certainly sounds like something we have to go back to the drawing board on. And also, I just want to say, Brian, overall, in your evaluation, in report cards of schools, in the whole system, when I'm mayor, we have to stop the obsessive teaching to the test. Standardized tests are part of the system now. We should do what the federal government requires and no more. But we have to stop living and dying by standardized test scores. They're just one piece of information about a student. But you, as the teacher, have a much better ability to know what your students need you to be teaching and doing to help them learn. And we need to stop judging every school, every teacher, every moment exclusively by these standardized tests. And I think the thing you're pointing out shows a really good example of something that needs to be changed, as well as changing the school report cards, which I would do when I'm mayor.
How, as mayor, do you order, in effect, under mayoral control of the schools to stop teaching to the test?
Well, you do a couple of things. One, you change the report card, right? Because one of the things that has such pressure on teachers and principals right now is that 85% of their report card grade comes from the test. You change that. You don't make the living and dying of what grade your school gets so based on the standardized
test. Wait, is that true?
Yeah.
I have a kid in the New York City public schools. I don't feel 85% of his grade is based on
the
statewide standardized
test. The school's report card. Right. So that should be changed because that drives a lot of the pressure in the school. One. Two, we need to expand the potential of schools to become what's called portfolio assessments, where if they want to opt out of all the testing, they can. And trust me, those schools do just as well, if not better, than other schools. Three, we have a crazy thing, and Brian, I don't know if your school is one of the ones that has to do a lot of it, called field testing, where students take tests that don't count. They're determining next year's test exams. Some schools lose 7 days of classroom time a year on that kind of craziness. We need to go to Albany and get the field testing requirement for New York City eliminated. And we need to change the kind of evaluation issues that Brian's raised on this call as well.
So we have about a minute left. I'm going to invite you to make a closing argument to the public. And maybe you want to frame it this way in the context of what, you know, maybe exactly where we are right now for many of the undecided voters. Why would you make a better mayor than Bill de Blasio?
You know, I would make a better mayor than Bill de Blasio because I'm never going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. You may not like every position I have, but I'm always going to be direct with you about what my positions are. Two, I'd be a better mayor than Bill de Blasio because I have the real record of having not just talked about being a progressive, but delivered as a progressive for New Yorkers, whether it was saving 4,100 school teacher jobs, whether it's making kindergarten mandatory, whether it's growing good manufacturing and tech jobs in New York during the recession. And I'm the person in this race who has the clearest progressive vision for moving forward, a plan to build 80,000 new apartments across the city, 40,000 for the middle class, a plan to create good jobs in every neighborhood in this city to make sure no one is left behind, and a plan to improve public schools everywhere in our city, and a plan to keep New York City the immigrant capital of the world.
Well, listeners, this ends our call-in round, our final round with the candidates for mayor in New York City. If you want to hear Bill de Blasio's argument for why he'd be a better mayor than Christine Quinn or anybody else's, go back to our webpage and you can listen to those recent segments or the handful that we've done with each of the candidates. And Chris Quinn, I want to thank you for all your accessibility during the campaign, coming on here repeatedly.
Thank you for having me.
And folks, now it's primary day. And if there's a runoff after Tuesday, we'll invite the two finalists back again.
October 1st.
So thank you again. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the issue that was supposed to make the headlines at the G20 summit before Syria overwhelmed it, stopping companies like Apple from avoiding taxes through international tax loopholes. David K. Johnston will be our explainer in chief on that. Stay with us.